Hello, and welcome to Vassals of Kingsgrave for our second of a two-part reread through The Hobbit. I'll be your host for the evening, Adam, also known as Drowned Snow on the podcast of Ice and Fire Forums. And with me, I have Paul.
Hey, this is Paul, Sir Dinneral on the forums.
Nadia.
Hey, everyone, this is Nadia.
And Matt.
Barley on the forums.
All right, and there you have it. So the first part through the first basically half book, and then we got a little bit into kind of the larger story. And this one, maybe we'll have time. We'll get a bit into that more than we did last time. Because it's just reading through this again, like, you know, you always notice stuff. But it is interesting. This was published, I think, I mean, almost 20 years before Lord of the Rings was published. So, I mean, it's a very different book. And it's gone through a number of edits. And he added on whatnot after Lord of the Rings was published. So there's a lot to take in there. But let's start with our first chapter, which is Chapter 10, A Warm Welcome. And I believe that's you, Nadia?
Yeah, okay. So I'm just here to read out your summary, okay? So, A Warm Welcome. Bilbo and the rest of the hobbits, the dwarves, are flowing down the river out of Mirkwood Forest. Bilbo is on top of a barrel while the dwarves are all inside, packed inside. Looking to the north, Bilbo sees the Lonely Mountain, the group's ultimate destination. For the time being, however, the river takes them towards Lake Town. Lake Town is a human city built on Long Lake south of the Lonely Mountain. At Lake Town, the barrels are brought to shore. The elves who had brought the raft down and the boatmen that take the barrels to the shore, they all go to a feast. Bilbo takes that opportunity to free the dwarfs in the barrel. They're very cramped, wet, hungry. Some of them are unconscious, but everyone has survived. Thorin, remembering who he is, goes to the town hall and declares that he is a descendant of the King Under the Mountain, returned to claim his inheritance. The people of the town rejoice. They've all heard stories of how gold flowed down the river when the King Under the Mountain reigned before Smaug came. They treat the dwarves and even Bilbo, who they don't know, you know who he is, like kings. After a fortnight, the company is strong and fat again, and they're eager to go off to the mountain, even though they still have no idea how to deal with the dragon. But Thorin feels they cannot wait any longer. They obtain boats, horses, and provisions from the master of Lake Town, and the company sets off up the river towards the Lonely Mountain.
All right, so, I mean, this is kind of a fun chapter, I guess. The elves are kind of like, what the hell, did we bring in our barrels? I mean, that's all a lot of fun. We find out that they are almost there, and they still haven't come up with any plan to deal with Smaug, because, I don't know, they didn't think that far ahead. Maybe they thought they'd never get this far, but, yeah.
Thorin seems like the kind of guy that he figures, you know, we'll get there somehow, even if we don't all make it. Somebody will get there. But they have, like, no plan to deal with Smaug.
I mean, they have this plan, this elaborate plan to get in, and, I mean, this will come up in a couple of chapters, and we'll discuss it more there, I think. But yeah, like, this is just not well thought out.
They get there, and they're like, well, to be honest, they set out with a wizard, and I think they were hoping that Gandalf would be with them the entire time.
And they're like, he can deal with the
dragon.
They're like,
he can do magic and shit. He can make fireworks, you know. He could obviously handle a dragon. And then when he leaves, they're already like, well, we're already this far. We might as well get there, and I guess we'll figure things out.
Well, no, because I think when they're first, like, in the unexpected party, I think they say something like, every one of us 14, except for our great wizard, may not make it back alive. Or so. They say something weird where it's like, okay, obviously Gandalf really isn't putting any skin in the game, really. Like, he's going to weave in and out of this story, and like, but even it always seemed like he would make it.
There's no real danger.
Yeah.
Even if he dies, he just comes back again. You know, no real problem for him.
Dude, respawn. Yeah, and I mean, this was all still before Tolkien had really come up with his concept of what, you know, what the wizards were going to be and how many there were and all that. So.
Yeah, because.
I mean, at one point in the book, it says he went to, like, the council. It was, like, the Council of the White Wizards or something, which just gets changed later, I think, to the White Council in. Is it Missile Marine? Where is that? It's somewhere else.
Probably Lord of the Rings is the White Council.
Because no, but I mean, like, they refer to this as the White Council that, like, Saruman, like, headed. Whereas yeah, here, it's just a Council of White Wizards.
Right. But I think they call it the White Council first in Lord of the Rings, Shadow of the
Path. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I think in one of the chapters I have, when we really find out where Gandalf really was, I think it's in Rivendell, and I don't think they, like, mention a council. He just talks about, oh, yeah, he went with, yeah, it appeared that Gandalf had been to a great council of the white, oh, yeah, it appeared that Gandalf had been to a great council of the white wizards, masters of lore and good magic, and they had at last driven the necromancer from his dark hold in the south of Mirkwood.
Yeah, it's like, the wizards got together, and they... You know, closed down
all three of them.
Dol Guldur or whatever. Yeah, all like in this book. I mean, it could have been a lot more than that. You know what he was thinking, but I mean, it all works out.
I mean, forget Galadriel and everything. Like at this point, Gandalf's like not Gandalf. JR is just like, you know,
JR.
these kids aren't gonna give a fuck. You know, this is a kid's book. This is something fun to read the kids. They don't need the lore behind it. And it's not until Lord of the Rings where he, like, takes off his shirt and goes, I'm going to do this. I'm going to...
Wait
a minute. Who takes off his shirt?
JR from Dallas.
JR.
But hey, at least he said JR, not George R.
Oh, whatever. To be fair, he, like, there is a fair amount of, like, lore and backstory in this. It just, you know, it's so early on, he hasn't developed it in the way he wants, and he, you know, makes changes and refines it later on. Like,
because we get references to, like, the Goblin Wars of Gondolin, and then when we actually read the Silmarillion, there wasn't really much of a war in Gondolin so much as there was just a sudden invasion. But
I mean, Gondolin fought in other wars.
True. Yeah. But like, the Goblin Wars...
Tears.
Yeah, because you get, like, in the Silmarillion, the Battle of Unnumbered Tears, and the Dwyer McDougar, and, like, and then...
What was that?
What was that again?
That's the Dwarven name for it.
That's the dark speech. That's the black speech.
It's a very... But then in, like, The Hobbit, it's the Goblin Wars, and... Like,
well, you've got a lot of goblin this, goblin that. I mean, you don't really have... The orcs are kind of not really a thing here, right?
Yeah, so, I think they're... There's a mention of them. Interchangeable, right? I mean, orcs are goblins.
I could have sworn that somewhere there's a mention of, like, a larger, like, race of orcs, like, this larger race of goblins, you know, that are, like, bigger.
Those are the Uruks, I think.
Yeah.
Uruks.
Well, I mean, in here, though, I thought...
Oh, right.
Really? I thought it was, like, in the first half...
Oh, like Bolg?
Yeah, it's like it was just like it was in passing, I think, but yeah.
Bolg.
Fuck that. Alright. So I mean that's about all there is this chapter. Yeah. They get a promise sort of from Stephen Fry, the master of Lake Town, and his buddy Alfred.
Oh my god.
Kind of like kind of like, hey, we'll help you guys out, sort of. I mean, they give them kind of minor provisions and the mm-hmm. ability to climb the mountain. But really, they don't expect anything.
Typical
and I guess
politicians.
Yeah, very typical. And he also doesn't really seem to have too much foresight into thinking, like, well, if they actually get in there and wake up the dragon, like, what the hell? And I guess a lot of people, the younger people, don't even really... I don't know, the dragon's kind of become myth at this point, even though it's obvious.
Well, yeah, like, yeah. The dragon hasn't been seen in, like, what, 50 years?
But you can see, like, everything that's been happening.
I was just saying they don't believe that the dragon is there anymore, that he might be dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
Right, and it's also become legend, like, when the dwarves kings, like, ruled, there's, like, rivers of gold or whatever, so...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they just care about the gold.
And that comes up later on, for sure, but I mean, I guess I can understand it, because, you know, a dragon has such a long lifespan, so it takes a nap for 60 years, it's not a big deal, it just, it's bored. And you also think, like, the dragons love treasure and all that, right? But Smaug, in order to come here, he had to have... You know, left a horde behind or something, probably, right?
It's going.
This is just more enticing. But he did. He raided the nearby areas, and like it wasn't just what was in the mountain when he took it. He took kind of every. I don't know how long he spent doing that, but he took kind of everything that he liked in the immediate area, and then took a nap.
Yeah, I think earlier in the book, they say something like, or maybe it's when one of my chapters, whatever, that he used to like. Plunder Esgaroth for maidens to the devour.
Ooh.
Which seems a very...
Esgaroth, by the way, is elven for Reed Lake, I think. You know, one of those on
Long
the
Lake.
Nose.
Long Lake?
I think it's Reed Lake, actually. I was looking that up a couple days ago. But it's, you know, like one of those things where elven words just basically mean exactly what the place is.
There are multiple languages of the elves. They all give them different names.
Even in the same language, they'll give something the same fucking name.
Yeah. That is true.
Stupid elves.
Alright, so let's move on to the next chapter, which is chapter 11, On the Doorstep. Nadia?
Okay. So, as they approach the foothills of the Lonely Mountain, the land turns bleak and barren. They have reached the desolation of a smog. But when they reach the foot of the mountain, Bilbo and three dwarves are sent to investigate the main entrance on the south side. The entrance looks far too dangerous because that is the gate that Smaug uses. So the company decides to search out the secret door described on their map, which is on the west side of the mountain. After hours of searching, Bilbo finally locates a narrow passage along a cliff that leads to a flat, smooth patch on the mountainside. Through the patch must be the door, but the dwarves cannot find a way to open it as they have forgotten the message that Elrond read from the map. The dwarves bang at the door with picks and axes, but to no avail, and they start to get really discouraged. One evening, Bilbo is sitting outside the door, lost in thought, when a thrush lands nearby and begins to knock a snail against a stone with its beak. Suddenly, the hobbit remembers the riddle on the map. He quickly gathers the other dwarves by the door, and they watch as the sun slowly sets. With the sun's last light, a single ray falls on a part of the door, and there a rock falls away to reveal a keyhole. Thorin quickly takes the key that came with the map and places it in the rock. When he turns it, the door's outline appears. The dwarves and the hobbit push open the door and stare into the depths of the mountain before them. Okay, so Thorin at least should have remembered that Elrond gave them this, like, major piece of information.
This whole story is like the dwarves like presenting themselves like they're presenting themselves like, oh, we used to be big shits, like we should know this stuff, and then it's like, oh, now we realize why we're like mining coal or something like that. It's like they make the stupidest fucking blunders this entire book, and yet they feel like they're so like entitled.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they have lost a lot of knowledge, haven't they?
Yeah, because there's not really much in the Blue Mountains. There's just, like, iron and, like, the tools of the dwarves rather than, like, gold and silver and jewels like they treasure. So, yeah, I doubt they did very much, like, research when they were in exile. More just they were brooding over the fact that they've basically lost everything.
They're like, this is my gold. I want my gold back. How do I do this? I don't know. But this unbreakable dwarf sword that we know it can't get entered, but with picks and axes, we're just going to pick an axe at death. Like, oh,
and then
God,
and then once I get in, I'm going to bring all of my treasure back on these two ponies.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We're going to alienate every race that could be a supply line back to our hometown. Oh my God.
I mean, they very clearly had to kill the dragon for this to work, and that's the one thing that we'll wing it. Something that like no one else has bothered to attempt. They don't bring in army.
Something
they
will
just
come up.
I feel like amongst the dwarves, they were kind of like the crazy uncles, you know. And everyone said, yeah, you going to reclaim the homeland. All right, you know, good work. See you later. It's like if Donald Trump was a dwarf, you know, he'd be like, I'm going to take back the Lonely Mountain. It's going to be great. All the gold. We're going to make a men of Lake Town pay us.
You're going to love it.
You're going to love it. The dragon, he's just going to be gone. He's probably not even alive anymore. No one's been in there in a while. Come on.
If not, don't worry, I'll take care of it. How? Don't worry,
Don't worry, I've got the best people. I'm bringing
the dragon.
I'm bringing along Gandalf, and he's told me about a great burglar who's really top-notch.
This hobbit, whose great-grandfather was something at one point, but...
Yeah, who once rode in a horse charge. Like, I think that's his claim to fame.
His claim to fame is the invention of golf and the fact that he was, like, above, like, almost 5 foot.
It's like, ooh, you're the... It's like a dwarf amongst midgets. Like, you've seen that, that Family Guy skit where he's like, yes, I can reach that. Like, no one else can reach it.
But I also kind of feel like maybe this is very dwarf-like of them, because dwarves are just very stubborn. They'll do things their way. They're very... like, adamant in how they do things rather than how someone else tells them to do things. Like, even when Sauron gives them these corrupting rings, the rings have, like, almost no effect on them other than just making them even more greedy. And so...
yeah. But they're still like, where are my rings? I want my rings. Don't take my rings.
Well, yeah, but they're, like, Sauron can't control them through those rings. He has to steal the rings back or, like, get them destroyed. Because he gives them the rings, and he's like, yes, here, take these rings. And, like, the dwarves take them, and they're like, thanks, dick. And then they run off and
make a bunch of gold with it. Like, I'm going to make some really cool stuff now.
Thanks, asshole. I'm going to go hollow out a mountain.
Yeah. Isn't that, like, part of, like, Galadriel's, like, gift to Gimli, like, even though, like, you'll be very prosperous, but over you, gold will have no power. And that was supposed to, like, overturn, like, what Sauron was doing to the dwarves. It's like, oh, you'll want to do everything for gold. Like,
yeah, that is.
Instead, Gimli does things for hair now.
I mean, I guess we could discuss if there's a bit of hair.
I'll make you make a basket. If you give me 3 locks of your hair.
He just keeps coming back for more. He's like, what are you doing? Like, I'm making a boat out of hair. Oh, boy.
Ew.
So anything else of note from this chapter?
Nadia, you got anything?
Yeah, and the unlocking of the door, that's a huge coincidence. Like, there's one ray of light that makes it through the clouds through the door.
And in the book, aren't they, like, still not even sure if they're going to be there on the right day? Because the calendar has basically been forgotten.
The calendar is a little messed up.
And they can't say for sure what the last Light of Durin's day is going to be.
But they get there, like, a few days before.
Is it possible that the Thrush and the Raven are the two smartest characters in this book?
They do some good work.
Bagginses are the smartest people in the book.
Oh boy!
They quickly capitalize on their debt.
They're like, he's dead.
All right, so let's move on to chapter 12, which is Inside Information. So let's see. They've just opened the door, and they're all pretty happy about that. Bilbo, though, not so happy because he realizes that the dwarves intend for him to go and look around, which is, I guess, kind of the whole reason why they brought him. He almost wants to refuse it, but he's kind of feeling brave and just kind of given everything that's going on, so he decides someone go with me for a little bit, and only Balin, the oldest of the dwarves, decides to go with him, but not that far, and leaves him on his own to go down the rest of the way. Once he gets in, he's kind of at a loss for words at the sight of the dragon's hoard, how large it is. I guess he knew that they were what they were coming for, but he didn't realize the extent of it by any means. I think the book it even says that there are no words to express how Bilbo felt since men changed their language from that which the elves had given to them. So it was one of those speechless moments. And Bilbo probably steals a cup, nice big goblet, and runs right out of there because he's like, fuck that. The dragon looks scary. So everybody's fist bumping and doing a happy dance and everything. But then they hear a noise from the mountain. And they realize that Smaug is awake because he creates earthquakes and stuff when he wakes up, I guess. He's grown quite large.
It was Cumberbatch's voice, wasn't it?
Yeah, might be it. The dwarves nearly piss their pants because they're so afraid and the sound is so terrible. Smaug flies around and he starts looking for stuff and he finds the ponies, but that's about it. And they worry because I think, was it Feely and Killy were left with the ponies? And they're just kind of like, oh, we're worried about them, but also they can't really do anything. So they just sort of hide up on the mountain where they're at. Let's see, they try to come up with a plan, and that mostly ends up to them blaming Bilbo for all of their troubles, which seems to be kind of their routine at this point. And Bilbo remarks that they didn't really explain things well to him, and they didn't tell him the vast extent of the treasure, and that really, if they were going to use a burglar to steal away the treasure, they should have brought hundreds and hundreds of burglars, because it would take him, like, several lifetimes to steal that treasure away little by little. And hopefully not be killed. Bilbo kind of realizes that he's sort of become the leader of the party at this point, which is a bit odd, but, you know, he sort of owns it. And he heads back down into the dragon's lair without really knowing that Smaug has a really good sense of smell. And so since he gets there, Smaug challenges himself to reveal who he is, and they play a game of riddles, and Bilbo never really gives his name, but he gives away a lot of other information, which is kind of important. Yeah, so Bilbo's being kind of clever, but he's also being a little too cocky, and it's not really a good idea. Dragon determines that Bilbo came with dwarves because he could smell them on the ponies, and I guess even after it's been such a long time since he ate dwarves, he still remembers the smell of dwarves. In this world, a lot of people like eating dwarves. Trolls like eating dwarves. Dragons like eating dwarves. Very interesting. They have a unique smell, I guess. And then Bilbo kind of does the thing where he pumps up Smaug, gets him to kind of go on a bit of a monologue, talking about how great he is, and gets him to roll over and reveal his underbelly, which Bilbo had suspected he saw something odd there his first time down, so he notices the weak spot, the chink in the armor. And he runs up the passage to tell the dwarves, but almost gets burned on the way. And that's it.
Smaug was brought down by the villain's greatest weakness, monologues.
I'm going to explain to you my master plan before I...
Well, I mean, in his defense, he can't find this guy because he's invisible, so he's just trying to keep him talking, probably. So, I don't know.
It all started when I was a boy.
You know, it's been 50 years since I talked to anyone.
Yeah, you know, I might want to, you know, have a good conversation before I eat you.
Do you like riddles? Bilbo's just like, ah, fuck, not again.
He's like, well, no, he's got the momentum. He's coming in there, like, fucking fully charged. He's like, I won the last game. I got this magic ring. You know, this... Dragons, you know, they send out a hoard of gold. If I beat him, I'm going to get that. Like, he's got momentum, and he's rolling with it. Like, that's what he's doing.
And in the notes here in my version of the book, it mentions that this is very similar to a poem, The Lay of Fafnir, which is an old poem about a dragon. Fafnir. Yeah. Well, it's like something that, like, you know, Tolkien obviously had read and everything. But it's very similar. The hero slays the dragon, and as he's dying, they sit having this conversation. And they riddle back and forth, and he never gives up his name. It's kind of the same. The same little structure there, which is interesting.
Huh. I googled Lay of, and a bunch of porn came up.
Well, my job is done.
Fafnir? You know, that naughty Fafnir fan fiction, it'll get you.
Oh, boy.
Oh, even in the Wikipedia, it mentions The Hobbit.
There you go. Yeah, it's an old like, North mythology poem. Like, let's see. It's from very long ago. I don't know exactly how old it is.
But. How old? Oh, it's very old. It's,
you know, a galaxy far away or something.
Okay, so Sigurd sent Fafnir to slay a dragon that was sitting on a gold pit. Is that Sigurd and what's her face?
Crap. Sigurdy Weaver.
Sigurdy. Oh, that's just so bad.
I'm sorry.
You get minus 5 points.
Ah, shit. Game hasn't even started yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay. It was one of the famous, like, mythological dragons up to this point. So.
And we know Tolkien was big into Scandinavian and Norse mythology, so.
Oh, what yeah. a nerd.
I bet he'd, like, make up his own secret language or something.
Or a couple of them.
Yelling at his kids in Elvish, they don't know what the fuck he's saying.
Ordering at the bar, be like, sir, are you drunk? Ordering a pint of Elvish, Sindarin. God damn it.
You know what Narnia needs, Lewis? A secret language. I don't have time for that, John. I don't give... It needs a language.
He's like, man, I turn these books out every 6 months. Come on.
Yeah. Hey, John, I got a light pulse, a satyr, a badger, and a lion.
I'm pretty sure, when he wrote the Chronicles of Narnia, C.S. Lewis had, like, the first three or four written before he went to, like, the publisher with the first one. So, I mean, he wrote so many books that, man, was...
John's just like, J.R.'s just like, you know what I really hate? Straight-up analogies. C.S. Lewis slowly hides Lion, Witch, in the Wardrobe under his chair. Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, they definitely, the two of them were a bit in conflict with how they viewed their narratives, but they were also very good friends, so.
Well, yeah, you know. Very good friends in the Inklings, and they had weird, like, discussions about Christianity and how it should be, like, almost portrayed in literature.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, because C.S. Lewis is like, you need all these analogies for people to learn from them. And, like, J.R. is just like, no, that's preaching. What they need is to think about it themselves and analyze it.
Yeah, I think it was kind of, I mean, like Tolkien was very devout himself, but it was just, yeah, it was more of a, you know, my story doesn't need to be about that.
Yeah.
Right. But even still, he has... You know, the death and resurrection of a character, the great sacrifice for better mankind from Frodo. You know,
I mean, but, yeah, you're gonna find like Christian elements in it, like you find a lot in Western cultures.
And I mean, like, even like those are just such common story themes nowadays. Like, you know, I don't know, you find them in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure from like. You know, the beginning of time, you could find something even probably from, like, Gilgamesh or something of,
yeah,
you know, the sacrifice of a great hero, you know, for the greater good.
There's really no new ideas anymore. There's just sort of new execution. It's kind of how it's been, I think, for a long time.
I mean, like, maybe the idea of, like, unconditional forgiveness maybe could be that, like, with Gollum, but everything else has basically been used a lot of the time.
Nadia, anything?
No.
I'm sorry. I feel like it's been like guys talking with featuring well, Nadia.
It's early in the morning for Nadia. She's still waking up.
Very, very, very early.
By the end of this, she'll probably be making speeches about how
the coffee hasn't gotten in there yet.
How Thorin is such a dick until like the last 2 seconds of his life.
Oh yeah.
We'll have that we'll have that conversation, I think. All right, let's move on then to chapter 13, which is Not at Home, and that immediately follows this. And so Smaug, he guesses from Bilbo's foolish riddling about being a barrel rider that somehow the men of the lake are involved, and so he decides he's going to destroy the lake town, which, I don't know, I guess he's just sort of ignored for a long time because
he found out that they have weapons of mass destruction, and it was totally justified. He was just going in to clear it out.
He was searching for the Black Arrow, but yeah, that joke's like 10 years too late. Anyway,
darn. I'm sorry, I was like one at the time.
More like 13. Side note, I found it very sad. History Channel is doing a thing on 9/11. I can't believe it's 15 years already.
Yeah, Jesus. I mean. Pretty soon, think of like the kids born after 9/11 will be going to college in a few years, and
I was starting my sophomore year in college.
Yeah, see, I was what was I 16, 17? I remember like waking up that morning and like seeing it on TV. And very weird. Anyway.
Sorry.
Let's avoid the 9/11 talk and focus on the hobby.
Yeah, let's just talk for hours about 9/11.
Are you sure we don't want to bring it back to the Jews? Because that was
safe. Oh my god.
But that was a legit conversation. Come on.
Yeah, that was about characters.
Yeah, so Smaug guesses that the company is involved with Men of the Lake, and he goes down there to destroy Lake Town. The hobbits, or the dwarf and the hobbits and all the people, they're pretty scared because they hear him flying out and the whole mountain shakes, so they run to hide in the passage. Just in time for it to collapse around them, and they get stuck. And they're kind of like, well, what do we do now? So they decide they might as well head on down, and they head down the passage long enough to say to Bilbo, you need to go and look around, and we're just going to wait here. And he looks around and sees that it's empty, and the rest of them come down and are like, yeah, baby, we won treasure. And start celebrating. Their plan was to just wait till he was gone and then move in and hope he doesn't come back. So, I mean, I don't know.
Honestly, these are, like, the most inept dwarves until, like, one of my chapters where they, like, completely own the fucking thing. Like,
yeah.
They're just like, oh, lucky we got trapped in the cavern that we're trying to enter. And
like, oh, don't leave the path.
That was good. Let's leave the path. Got killed by someone else. Just like
it's
such a stroke of luck that Bilbo lets slip that he's a barrel rider.
Which is that a stroke of luck, or is that like terrible for the people of the lake town?
Well, for the dwarves,
I mean, it's lucky
that's lucky.
Well, but I feel like at some point he would have flown out and looked for them. You know. What's lucky is that he mentions Smaug's weakness when talking to them outside, and the thrush hears it and heads on down to Lake Town.
Oh yeah,
dude, this is why the thrush is one of the smartest characters in this whole fucking book.
Yeah, forget Bard. The thrush is the real hero here.
Dude. Oh yes.
That bird better have gotten like a 14th share of the treasure.
Yeah,
at least. At least a 14th share of the 14th share. I mean, without that intel, Bard would have been just firing at anything.
And we should get to we'll talk later about how the whole shares thing is nuts anyway. But, yeah, so anyway, they're all grabbing up stuff, and Bilbo is just kind of unimpressed until he comes across the Arkenstone and decides, well, this is my share of the treasure. In a moment of pure stupidity, but whatever.
I already have a ring cursed by a dark lord. I might as well
a magical elven knife.
I might as well take this glowing stone that causes dwarves to go insane. I'll take this.
And the dwarves are even, like, they're just being super generous right now. They find a coat of mithril, which is amazingly rare, and they're like, you know what, Bilbo, this is totally for you, man. Like, come on, bro.
I like how it was, like, made for, like, an elven, like, child.
Yeah. It's, like, so small.
And it makes me think, they're sending elf children into battle? When was this again?
Well, we don't know.
It takes so long to age up, maybe.
Yeah, they might be 60 years old by the time they're, like, you know, 5 foot.
Yeah, they still look like they're 12 and they're 100, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, and the interesting thing here...
Won't they be mentally aging slowly as well?
Oh my god, Legolas is like a 3-year-old until the age of 50.
And oh my god, imagine like, going through Thranduil's puberty like, for like 35 years.
No, but seriously, in medieval times at least, they considered like boys to be men at 12, right? So they would have armor and everything.
Yeah.
A man grown.
Yeah, exactly.
An elf so. Grown.
Yeah, I guess it was basically once you could hold the tools to work, you worked. Once you could hold the tools to fight, you fought. Like, you know, it's just kind of how it was. So, anyway, it is interesting though that mithril was not in the original version. It just, I think it said like a fine silver coat or something, and then you know that it was like unbreakable, yada yada. That was added post Lord of the Rings. To kind of tie it all back together.
So mithril would have been in the map as well, right? Because it was like that moon writing.
Yeah, it has the moonstone stuff that was made by the elves of Eregion.
Yeah.
So
it's great. You really do sound like you're in a wind tunnel.
Oh, I have like 5 fans pointed at me right now. Here, I'll turn off a few of them.
Yeah, hey, if you can't sweat for the podcast, you know, come on.
All right. Is that better?
Yeah. I don't hear... I never heard it in the first place.
I just heard the...
Alright.
Maybe so, that was me just going...
Maybe. So after all of this shameless excitement and trying to fill their pockets with gold and realizing that like they're not going anywhere and maybe carrying it around all the time is going to be a pain in the butt, they actually start looking around to see what's going on. And they find the passages through to the main gate and the river. And they still have no idea what they're going to do when Smaug returns, but they kind of start, you know, planning for it, kind of, I guess. They're really hungry. So they
move
they
your
go
feet,
get...
lose your seat, Smaug. And Smaug's yeah, it's like, darn. Well,
We're gonna place some watchmen here to let us know if he's coming back before we get eaten. Like, I don't really understand what they were thinking they were gonna do, but yeah. So in the meantime, they realize that there's nothing they can do. I think so. They're like, we're hungry, and they go down the river and go looking for food.
But then they go up to this watchtower, right? But anyone who's approaching can also, I'm assuming, can also see the watchtower, right?
Yeah.
So what was their plan? Like, if Smaug did come back, what were they going to do? Were they just going to hide in this one room that Smaug could just destroy with one flame? Like,
oh, he would smell them and just, yeah, eat them. Or, like,
yeah, exactly.
I don't know. I guess they couldn't go back outside through their passage. And once they got down and saw everything, they were like, it's ours, you know. It's like, I don't know, if you're a criminal and you get into the vault or something and then you just stop thinking about your escape plan and you don't realize the cops are on the way. And like, maybe that's kind of how it seems. They're just like, well, it'll work itself out, you know.
This whole fucking trip was, oh, we'll figure this out. Oh, don't worry.
And I think at one point, don't they say something, they talk about how... Well, like, oh, he'll just get back in the, you know, he'll get back in. They're like, well, you know, it had been real peaceful when he showed up originally, and our guards were a little lax. The watch was lax, and, you know, they're kind of talking about how, like, oh, you know, if the dwarves had been on better guard, we totally could have taken the dragon, which, I mean, no, they couldn't have.
Yeah.
Like, they had thousands of dwarves in there, didn't they? So
they did take down dragons in the past, though. So yeah. Even Turin had a dragon helm that like reflected dragon fire or some bullshit like that. So like they had technology to.
I'm just saying I feel like surprise was not like the deciding factor for Smaug taking up residence, you know. But I mean, if they had known he was coming, you know, hours in advance, and you know, set up a line of defense, you know, maybe things would have been different. But who knows?
And I mean, essentially, the entire dwarven journey can be summed up with "Hold my beer, watch this," and just winging it the entire time. They don't know what they're doing, but they're like, we're going to do it because we're dwarves, and by right, that gold is ours, and I'm going to give everyone gets, like, enough gold to buy out, like, all of Gondor. And
there's a bit of Stannis in them, like, you know, like, well, I mean, I'm, you know, we're supposed to have this gold, so we're just going to get it, right? You know? All right, Bilbo, go do some work for us. Like, oh, something's going on, Bilbo. Can you take care of that?
Hey, Bilbo, thanks for everything. You fucked it up.
Yeah, hey, Bilbo, what are we paying you for? Go save us again. I'm like,
what are we? Yeah, and then he takes. I'll get into it in my chapters, but Jesus Christ, like these guys are
whole. Well, I mean, I don't know. Well, yeah, we'll get into it when we get to that. But it's just like I don't really understand. Like, once you get here and you realize they talk about, like, a 14th of the treasure, like, just even splitting that up is, like, how long is it going to take to count it? And, like, I don't know. I guess when you're doing an agreement like that, it's just sort of to say, like, we all have an equal claim on this.
But don't they manage to count it, like, in one day?
With, like, all of the dwarves there, the dwarves in the Iron Hills, they all just take turns. I don't know. There's quite a lot of it.
When before the Battle of the Five Armies, I think it mentioned somewhere, I haven't read this in a while, but it says that, you know, they sort of piled all the gold and then they weighed out all the gems. I don't know if they weighed out all the gems or not, but there was something about counting all
there was the making gold. Like, they made an account of what was there, I think.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think they actually were like, we have. Yeah.
Come on. Okay. Spoilers.
Okay. Spoilers.
I'll explain that
all to you. If anything we learned during this journey is that Bilbo is the kid in school who would get paired up with all the stupid kids in the group, and then he would just do the entire group's work.
All the work?
Basically. All the work, basically, yeah.
I mean, I don't want to give the dwarves, like, too much shit for... I mean, you know, like... going out on a limb for this is great, and, like they managed to do some things, but without Gandalf kind of, like, hand-holding, I don't know what they would have done, and I think they knew that, so...
I think one of them helps Bilbo climb a tree to escape the wolves. they do some stuff.
They also carry him on his back in...
Oh, yeah, yeah, they carry Bilbo.
Bilbo's like the equipment manager for the football team, right? Like, he's like, yeah, we won the championship! Like, I helped all these idiots out, and, you know... I don't know. Or he's like the coach or something.
But yeah, I mean, like, their intentions are good. It's just, it seems like this is an impossible plan, like, from the get-go.
And,
but, you know, Gandalf knows.
This is a children's book.
Yeah.
And so, you can tell that. Yeah, you can tell that, like, J.R.R. is just like, I wonder how children would act if they had someone who could do all this stuff. And I mean, Bilbo is a very valuable resource, keep in mind. They have hired him. He is technically their employee. And
everything he ever makes is owned by them intellectually.
Yeah, and essentially, like, if he has proven that he can, like, disappear in a blink of an eye, and they think, oh, it's because he's got halfling magic. But in reality,
he's also quiet. Like, if you gave one of them the ring, they'd be like, hey, Smaug, ching, ching. Like, he'd be like, oh, you're right there on that pile of gold. And it would kill them.
Why Gimli wasn't given the ring to bring to Mordor? I'm going to punch my way through the Black Gate.
All right. Let's move on to chapter 14. That is Fire and Water, and that's the consequence of them having a nice empty mountain to just kind of hang out in. So we switch focus to the point of view of Smaug as he flies over Lake Town and getting his vengeance on. He burns every roof in the city because that's how he is. The people of Lake Town come out and try to mount a defense, but some of them at first think it's, when they see his flame, they think it's the river running gold again and they're all about to be rich until they realize it's not, and they all go and try to get buckets for water because they realize he's about to burn them. Which I would maybe just be diving in the water and waiting it out personally, but that's just me. So their weapons are useless until Bard, the captain of the archers, readies his last arrow, and a thrush lands on his shoulder and is like, "Bro, you can understand me, right?" And Bard's like, "Yeah, of course." And he tells him about the weak spot in the underbelly, which I don't know how he's able to see it with the speed the dragon's flying and all that, but he finds it and takes down the dragon. Real easy. I mean, the death toll is probably really high and their entire town is gone, but, you know, whatever. So the dragon comes crashing down, destroying the rest of the town as he dies, because he lands right on it. And Bard manages to dive safely into the water with the rest of the people who are already there trying to hide from the scorching flames. Like I said, that's the way to go. And they're all mourning the loss of their town and their provisions for the winter. And you know, basically, they're screwed, even though they've killed this dragon. So some of them start to blame the dwarves for waking the dragon, which, you know, I can see that. You have a point. But most assume that they're probably dead, and the dragon came down seeking vengeance after he found them. Then the men remember, oh, there's gold in the mountain, because there isn't any in the village. And,
is that an old man accent?
There's gold in them hills! A bunch of old prospectors start running up the mountain because they think because they're like, well, I don't even have to dig for this; it's just there, ready to go.
The rush of 2073.
They leave the pickaxe behind.
I can just picture them throwing like just random gold coins into a pan and just panning it.
I found gold. This is pure.
I got an Ockit stone.
Yeah, so they, and Lake Town's not like a huge town anyway. You know, it's, I don't know. And there's nothing around to really help them or provide support. That's kind of the big issue, which will kind of come up later. So,
How this town exists, like, it's on a lake. Like, you know, you see, like, towns on, like, seasides and rivers that have currents that you can, like, poop into the water and it'll break, you know, wash it eventually away. But, like, it's a lake.
Well, it's hooked up to the river running. And it empties out.
Yeah, but the river running goes in.
No, that's...
No, it keeps going.
Yeah, it empties out into the Sea of Rune.
Yeah.
Oh, so the Sea of Rune is like the fucking leech field for the entire lake town.
Well, that's where the Easterlings live, and no one gives a shit about the Easterlings, really.
Let them have shitty water.
I can see why the Easterlings sided with Sauron now. The elves, the men, the dwarves are all sending their shit down the river. And Sauron's like, how about I give you just free drinking water and you serve me? And they're like, good deal. Yeah, we'll do that. Sauron, not a bad guy.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, but, so I have a question. Yeah. I have a question. Smaug can fly, right? He's a dragon that can fly, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But when he's about to attack Lake Town, their first line of defense is to destroy the bridge that connects them to the shore, right? Why do they do that? Like, if he can fly, and even Smaug, like, stops at the shore and he thinks, you know, this lake is so huge, it can extinguish my fire if I fall into it, so he sort of, you know, second guesses himself. But if he can fly, Then why is he wondering? And in the very next paragraph, he's soaring above the town. Like,
I'm gonna guess muscle atrophy to begin with, or maybe like, you know, his wings had fell asleep from napping for so long. So he's just like, I really can't use them right now. I could cross the bridge if I could.
I was thinking that maybe it's because, you know, he can fly in like short bursts at a time, but then the very next paragraph, it says that he's soaring above the town. So
I feel like he can fly fairly well, but it's quite possible that he's been sitting for so long. Maybe he's just kind of grown a little, you know, atrophied or fat or something. Flying is not like his, he's kind of like, eh, you know, this is a little too much work.
And they talk about how he's grown fat on the end of Dale. And if he is an old dragon, and like the last time he flew around was basically like a century ago when he first ate a bunch of dwarves and men, and has still been eating dwarves and men, and has just like his wings have not kept up with his body, and so I can imagine like he gets really tired when just flying, so he's like, fuck it, I'll walk. And they cut the bridge. He's like, well, goddamn, now I have to use my wings.
Yeah.
Doesn't he, like, fly down to Lake Town? Like, he's flying down the mountain, right? He flies to the top of the mountain, then he goes around to the side, then he flies all the way
to Lake Town.
Yeah, and it says that he's so fast that, you know, he covers, like, this really long distance in just, like, minutes. They can literally see him approaching.
You know what it's like? It's like an escalator. You can either, you know, have it bring you down slowly, or like have to use your own muscles to get somewhere. Like on the or the walkways in the airport. It's like, I could walk this entire way, or I can walk half the way and have this thing like bring me. Like, he was just looking for like the easy solution and not like having to use like his wings and his legs and everything, you know.
And it also says that that no one, and maybe cutting the bridges was just kind of like their standard for invaders to, I don't know, protect themselves. But it also says that no one cut ourselves off as defense, and like they just weren't thinking. I don't know. But it says that he also hadn't gotten a challenge from anyone in like so long. He kind of forgot what it was like to have people that fought back, and it says if it wasn't for Bard, the people of the town probably wouldn't have fought back. And then somewhere along it says he's really enjoying the sport of town baiting, like he's just having so much fun destroying this town. So maybe that's what it was. Is he's like, oh, they're fighting me? Well, I'm gonna fly and I'm gonna burn some roofs, and you know, like he's just like,
I forgot how fun this is.
Yeah. Oh, they're not just going to roll over and die. All right, you know. I mean, that could have been it, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, but it still doesn't answer my question.
I don't really have an answer for that one. It is weird.
And I was just thinking, it's so different from the movies. You know, in the movies, Bart is like arrested and whatnot.
Praise God.
And I hadn't read this in a while, right? So I figured the arrow, they made up the arrow too, like this one arrow that he had. But it was sort of mentioned in the book too, like.
It's not like a ballista, you know. Well, yeah, it's like just a black arrow.
But it is an arrow that he's inherited from, like, his ancestors.
Yeah, it's like his old good arrow, and then he's just like, you know, I don't lose this one because this is my good arrow. But I guess like in the movie, it might have been. Yeah, it's like, you know, this is my good arrow. It kills everything. But it might have been ridiculous to see this giant dragon taken out by a small arrow. You know, you'd have to, like, show it piercing all the way through to the heart. I don't know, whatever. But I think it was much more ridiculous to have this one, like, ballista tower surviving. And, like, just the whole thing was, I mean, it added, like, hours to the viewing experience that was not needed.
Isn't even used in the end. He uses his fucking son as its ballista.
Oh, my God.
let's forget.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Where's Bilbo? I think I blocked out that part. Anyway, so news of this, of course, spreads quickly through the area. And the elves are like, mm-hmm, gonna get me some. Like, everybody starts showing up. because they remember that the dragon was protecting lots of shiny things. So there you have it. They assume that the treasure is just basically there for whoever gets it. And let's see, I think Bard, doesn't he send... I think he sends messengers to bring the Elven King along, so they're kind of, you know, buddy-buddy.
Well, yeah, they've been trading for so long, and they must have...
Like... But I mean, he doesn't have a thought of, like, well, we're just going to get up there and claim the mountain and live in there to survive the winter, you know. So, I think that he realizes he needs the Elves' help with their whole town burned and no other settlements nearby. Is there anything else in this chapter?
I mean, he's mentioned, like, there are women that exist in this world. So, is there even a single female character in the whole Hobbit book?
Like, yeah. Do you run into any women?
Lobelia.
Yeah, Lobelia Sackville-Baggins.
Sackville-Baggins.
Oh, that's wonderful.
One of the only smart people in the books.
Yeah, he's a greedy bee.
Hey, she wants those spoons. She has been waiting years for those damn spoons.
That's why Peter Jackson realized that The Hobbit needed a strong female storyline.
His OC, Toriel.
Great.
And he also put in that one Asian woman in Lake Town, which was weird. That stood out like a sore thumb.
I don't even remember that.
She's Easterling sent to complain.
Like an Asian.
She's the Easterling sent to complain to the men of Lake Town to stop dropping their shit in the goddamn river because it's clogging everything up.
When they finish with the barrels from the Elven King, they just dump them.
Yeah.
Like, empty barrels. We can taste what was inside them. This is not very nice. Yeah.
Hashtag the Easterlings did nothing wrong.
I've blocked out most of the Lake Town stuff from movies.
So bad. Alfred, why?
But I remember very vividly, like, the dwarf army charging and, like, the cool stuff. So
I remember Stephen Fry, because I always remember Stephen
Fry.
Why
do I only remember all the bad stuff?
That sounds like your problem, Nadia.
All right, let's move on to chapter 15, shall we? The gathering of the clouds.
So this is like the Audubon chapter, where we just get bird magic, and the birds are the smartest people in the room. So the thrush returns to the mountain, and he brings with him the son of Carrick, I think. I forget his name. Anyway, but he's like, hey, we used to be good buddies with the old dwarves here, and let me tell you, like, shit is going down. The elves are coming. The men are gathering. They basically describe, like, what is going on to the dwarves, and Thorin is just a dick. He's just like, oh, no, well, I don't care about them. They deserve nothing. The guys eventually come down, like, they kind of fortify the mountain, and the men of the Lake Town and the elves come and to parley, and they say, well, we need to be, you know, recompensated. We killed the dragon, so first of all, pay us.
Kind of a big deal.
Second of all, pay us. You know, we're not asking for all your money, we're asking for, you know, good, you know, reimbursement for our losses. I don't know why the elves are there. They just said that, like,
elves are assholes.
Yeah, it's like news of the wealth like that Smaug died, like, traveled wide, and that everyone just assumed you died, so all the gold and treasure was up for grabs. Like,
yeah, well, I mean, the Elven King doesn't really ever do anything. Like, he sends people out to fight the spiders, I guess, a little bit. But, yeah, I mean, because when Bard sent people after him, like, his army was already, it was only a couple of days, like, past, since Smaug had died, and his army was already, like, halfway up the river, right?
Oh, yeah.
And, like, it is interesting that he brings a full army, because he's like, well, better get in there and lay claim to those shiny jewels and bring them back here, like, before anyone else shows up. So
elves have a bad history of getting valuable jewels.
Yeah. So, I mean,
like, it's not like, yeah, like, it's not like his motives are perfectly clear.
Well, they make their offer, and Thorne's like, no. Go fuck yourself.
Well,
and then he's like, well, you know what? Give me some time, and I can reimburse Lake Town, I think. And then they're like, well, we'll meet up in a couple more days to see how you feel.
But I just, I feel like this is you know, ice and fire comparison is very, it's like a very Stannis thing. But I also think, like, I don't know, I can see both sides of it, because clearly Bard should be paid. And, like, yeah, like, we'll give you money to rebuild your town, but the money isn't going to help rebuild the town. There's nowhere around to spend it. Like, I mean, they'll have to go very far to spend that money, because there's nothing around.
I mean, that's...
But they are trading with, they're trading with the elves, they're trading with the south, so they need money to do that, right?
No. I agree. Like they should definitely have money, and like the elves should have money. Like, there's so much money, they should just be like, sure, everybody have some money. Like, we're opening up the vault here. Like, we're celebrating. And I think maybe Thorne might have had an idea like that, but these guys show up right away and they're like, so here are demands, and this is what you're going to do. And he's like, well, I'm the king now, and like, what the hell? Like, they're not showing him any respect, and, like, they're not really making outrageous demands either. Although, the whole thing, like, we are due a 12th of a portion of, like, you know, I mean, portions versus just saying I need, like, 1,000 pieces of gold, maybe, might be a better idea. Well,
I mean, it might be a better dwarven economic policy not to release a 12th of this golden hoard into the economy, because it would depress prices, or, you know?
Like, oh, well, they're not that smart, Farley.
Well, I'm just saying.
These are the guys who said,
if Hino was listening, you would give me a shout out on YouTube and or the WordPress that, yes, flooding the market
was not a good idea.
Yeah,
but they flood the river, like, right? Doesn't the river flow with gold? Like, that's just it. Is once they take up here and their people are there, they can just get, there's this place is flowing, right? So, again, yeah, like, these people demand, yeah, well, I'm sure, like, but I'm sure there's still gold.
No, I know, but that's how it used to be. Like, the current situation is not how it used to be, so there's not gold going in, so everyone knows what everything's worth. There's a lot less gold, and now they're going to flood it, and all of a sudden, you know, it's going to be like 3,000 gold pieces instead of one gold piece.
But for that, like, you give the elven king whatever, and I mean, do the elves really even spend much as far as gold goes? Give them whatever they want. Like, who cares? That's probably just going to stay with them.
Why would you give the people of the town give the ones to imprison you?
Why should the elves any gold? Like,
yeah, they fucking imprisoned them.
No. I agree. I mean, in this case, you're like, you know, 13 people, so you're just sort of buying their way to make them go back home. It's like paying off, like, the barbarians at the gates. But the men of the lake who lost their town, like, they deserve to be compensated.
Yeah.
That got weird for a second.
Yeah.
What happened?
We had to cut the bridges, and my grandmother was on fire, and
we cut the bridges, but I just flew back in.
I took control for a second, and it went to cut the bridges, and
you're like, there's no thrush. There's no thrush telling me what to do.
Yeah.
Where were we when I cut out?
You were about to say something about something, and I'm sure it meant it was profound. But I'm not
probably
sure.
Not. It never is. I was just saying that, like, if they, like, they're paying off the elves to kind of go away because, like, we're here now, and, you know, they're basically just, all of this is really just to buy time, you know, to get their army there.
But and, the men of Long Lake deserve at least some due compensation.
But yeah, they deserve to have their town rebuilt, and that's going to be a lot more through labor, because you're going to have to, like, the money's not going to be spent there, because it's just them. So you give them a bunch of money, what are they going to do, pass gold around while saying, like, well, we need food and shelter? So and they're going to have to hire people. But then
dwarves good at, they're good at building.
Yeah, exactly. So the dwarves would offer their services, and, like, as far as provisions and everything else, that money's going to go somewhere else, and they're going to bring it back, right?
Well, what I think what was going to happen was they were going to give all this gold to the Lake Town people, and then the Lake Town people were going to pay the dwarves to do the work for them.
But then they got to pay someone for, like, elves, food, right? And whatever, so.
Well, the elves farm. The dwarves notoriously don't farm or grow.
But again, like, their demands, like Thorin becomes kind of a dick here. They're clearly all a bit.
Becomes?
yeah. But they're clearly all a bit caught up in greed. But at the same time, they come to him with demand and say, like, you will give Bard, a 12th portion, and he will generously help rebuild Lake Town, but you should also generously help rebuild Lake Town. Like, it's, I don't know, it's
and this not, is the fact it, that you have two besieging armies outside the gates.
Yeah, yeah, it's you basically, are this is people. All at gunpoint. This is all at gunpoint. There's no sitting down and saying, oh, well, you're alive, so, I mean, obviously this is your ancestral home, we're due some of that, right? Let's figure this out, and everybody be happy. Like, here's what we want, and then he's like, no, I'm not giving you anything. And they're like, well, that's what we're going to accept is exactly that, sorry.
But seriously, they should have paid, like, Bard a half of the gold, like, just for getting the dragon.
I think otherwise, they would have.
Any of it. Would they? I don't think Thorin would have.
Thing is, like, what is Bard going to do with all that gold? He still has to rebuild his home.
They wouldn't pay him that much.
The thing is, I don't think Thorin would have given him all that gold, because he was caught up with the greed of having his own treasure back.
Okay, so let's go to chapter 16, because this kind of gets to that point.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And it's a quick one, too.
Yeah, so Bilbo sees how awful this is and how unnecessary it is, and he steals the Arkenstone out of the caverns, goes to the camp of the armies, and presents it to Bard as a bargaining chip. He says, this is my 1/14th. Did I say it right?
No, you're good. I'm just Bilbo right here. Is yeah.
Oh, all right. So he's just like, listen, if you need to negotiate, like, this is how you negotiate with Thorin. Like, this is my part of the treasure. Here you go. So the next day they go back to the mountain and they're like, oh, maybe you want to reconsider, Thorin. And Thorin's like, why? Why the fuck would I do that? And Gandalf shows him the Arkenstone, and Thorin is super pissed at Bilbo. So Bilbo is kind of kicked out, and Thorin says that his 14th share for the Arkenstone will be given to, I guess, him and the men of Dale in the form of gold and silver, but they have to figure that out. So eventually they'll, like, give that to them, but they need the Arkenstone now, and rightly the other people are like, no, fuck you, you're not getting them. Arkenstone until we get the money, and I think that's it for that chapter. So I think I kind of went into chapter 17, but
sorry, I'm just staring at this picture of Bilbo holding the Arkenstone that Adam sent in the chat. That is
weird.
It is a beautiful picture.
That picture is from the 1976 French edition. It is amazing. Bilbo with his afro and interesting clothing.
Smug face.
Yeah, holding up the Arkenstone, which, I mean, where does he hide that? I don't know. Thing is huge.
Why does he have a straight foot hair and, like, a perm on top?
I don't know. It's a 1976 French artist. So, anyway. Yeah, like, this is just kind of ridiculous. I mean, Gandalf shows up. And, like, what the heck is with Gandalf? Like he explains kind of
why
I've been dealing with other stuff, but hey, hope this works out for you. Just kind of walks off. Like, that's an interesting play. And like he doesn't take control of the situation or really do much of anything.
But it's impressive because Bilbo gave up basically his shares just so everyone would get along.
Well, except this Gandalf is stupid because they won't.
Yeah, I know, but Gandalf is like, this is what I was envisioning.
This is, right? The hobbits can resist a lot of these temptations. Although, in the first place, he was very much drawn in. Like, when he first finds the stone, I think he says, like, well, you know, I think I'll take this as my portion. It's, you know, easy to take back home, and, you know. Except, like, he was like, I think it says something like, Bilbo was quite certain that, you know, this was not to be included in the portioning or whatever. Like, but he kept it anyway and didn't tell anyone. I mean, how different would this situation be if he had just been like, hey, guys, and then everyone's super happy. They've got the Arkenstone. Like, maybe Thorin's in a better mood when it comes to giving out some treasure. I don't know. But, yeah, in this situation, I think it just adds fuel to the fire, really, because he's like, fine, I'll pay to have the Arkenstone back, and they're gonna bring all this treasure out, but really, he's just waiting for Dane to arrive.
Yeah, but do you really think that, I mean, I guess I'll go into, what chapter are we on now?
Chapter 17, The Clouds Burst.
This was really great. Tolkien really describes the Dane army, I guess, really well. Like, they have huge coverings over their top, but like really nimble, like leg movement, so they can move really fast. They can also carry like great loads. So like they brought foodstuffs that can, you know, supply the mountain for however much of a time, but Thorin has enough family that they can have a like supply train into the mountain, and so the siege really doesn't work.
Yeah, because their idea is that they would get in and they have provisions to defend the mountain and open up one of the other passages, in which case, like on the other side of the mountain, and the armies wouldn't be able to siege there, and it would kind of be over.
Yeah, so, okay, so Bard reveals he has an Arkenstone, and then, okay, so Thorin says, like, he'll do anything for that 14th amount, like, but give him time to, you know, give him silver and gold, and the guys are like, no, we're not handing over the Arkenstone until you give over the silver and gold, and then Dane comes in, and everything's about to go to shit, and then a black cloud forms. And it's not a cloud, really. It's a cloud of crows, and they're covering the goblin army. So even though everyone was about to go against each other, they're like, our common enemy is the goblin.
Which is kind of amazing.
Yeah, Gandalf is like, okay, all of a sudden, like, hey, Dane, get in here into this tent and let's figure this shit out, because we have to kill these goblins. And they meet with Dane, Bard, and Vandril and figure out, you know, a strategy, and shit really goes down. And Bilbo hates it, but loves, like, in the book, he says, like, he hates it, but he loves to tell the story again and again. At the time, he was not happy about it. So, thoughts?
But Gandalf knew that the goblin army was coming, right?
Yeah, he knew that they were on the march. And
well, yeah, couldn't he have, like, mentioned it to Thranduil and Bard, like, maybe a little before they actually got there, so they would have time to prepare?
Nadia, I think a wizard is never late or early. He tells people precisely when he means to.
I think he thought they wouldn't listen, maybe, or they would dismiss him, or I mean, it, given the context of you know, the later, like, Lord of the Rings and stuff, he should have just said, you would think he would just say something, and they go, oh, yes, Gandalf, okay, absolutely. But as soon as they see the goblins, it is, they're all like, okay, everybody, like, dwarves and humans and elves, everybody links arms and starts fighting.
No,
like,
but
everyone's like, united in their racism against orcs and goblins.
Yeah, but when they're negotiating with Thorin, like, they're all bickering. Couldn't have Gandalf have interrupted and said, like, you know, there's something you should all be worrying about more right now, which is this huge goblin army. But he doesn't. He just waits.
And all those bats.
And he just waits for them to arrive, and then he says, like, oh, I knew about that.
Which, like, the bats?
I just love drama.
Well, doesn't he say, like, this is it's sooner than I expected or something?
No. He says something like, the goblins are attacking sooner than I expected. Like,
yeah.
Apparently he saw, like, you know, the elves, men, dwarves confrontation happening, but then all of a sudden these goblins come over.
But the,
okay,
like,
so the goblin army came at just like at around the time that the elves and men and the dwarves are going to war with each other, right? So what was Gandalf going to do? The goblin army hadn't arrived like then. Was he just going to wait around while they fought to the death, and then whoever survived could fight the goblin army?
And lose?
Yeah, exactly.
Except we learn that that doesn't matter because the eagles have like gathered from the four winds and they're ready to win the battle.
So the elves and men and dwarves are just expendable because, you know, the eagles can defeat the goblins.
I don't know.
This is, you know, terrible. Gandalf always does this. He never gives away any information.
Gandalf is the true Dark Lord.
Yeah, now that I think about it, I think Gandalf was the one who gave the dwarves the plan of, like, we'll figure out killing the dragon when we get there.
Yeah.
Because now he's like, oh, well, now let's figure out how to kill the goblins when they're actually here, rather than, like, before.
Yeah, and so the Battle of the Five Armies, though, is, it's weird because it's specified as the elves, men, and dwarves, and then goblins and wolves on the other side. But then you also have the bats and the eagles that show up, so...
And Bjorn.
I don't know. And it even says here in, like, in my version, it notes, like, in the Rankin and Bass animated version, it replaces the wolves with the eagles, so it's, like, 4-on-1. It's, like, 4 armies to 1 army.
The Rankin Bass Hobbit. Oh, that's...
Yeah.
That's a classic.
What the fuck is Rankin Bass?
They're the animation company, like, back in the 70s and stuff that made all those.
Have you not seen the animated Hobbit?
Oh, that made the Elven King look like a fucking devil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They made, like, the wood elves look like orcs, basically.
Yeah.
I was actually more comfortable around the goblins than I was the wood elves.
Well, they did their job then.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, like, they very quickly, you know, form lines, and what is it? I think it says the elves are, like, make the first charge, and they rally at the mountain, and, like, Gandalf, everybody gets into it. Even Bilbo.
Bilbo's just watching.
Bilbo's fucking invisible and, like, off to the side.
No, he gets in there, and he's in between stuff, but he can't be seen, so, I mean, what does it say that he, like, you know, the ring kept him somewhat safer because, you know, he was wearing his armor, and then the ring kept him somewhat safer because people couldn't target him.
Yeah, but
like,
right.
There's nothing also, that could really...
He wasn't even helping, though, because all he was doing is being a hobbit and going, oh my, this is most irregular. Oh,
right.
How peculiar. Uh-oh. I shall write this in my book.
I stabbed that guy in the foot.
I think he said something like, the ring couldn't, like, help him be pierced by arrows or, like, lessen his head from, like, some orc sword. But, like, it kept him invisible. And then all of a sudden he gets knocked in the head by a rock and, like, pulls a Tyrion on the show version of the Battle of the Green Fork. and like just wakes up later on, and the battle.
No, except someone goes looking for him, and no one can find him because they assume he's dead because he's invisible. Like
that's my chapter.
Okay. Okay. So yeah. Sorry, jump ahead. So he actually gets knocked on the head. And while he's visible,
he's invisible.
He gets knocked on the head,
and like he, you know, a stone falls from the mountain or something, and that's it.
JR throws a rock at him so he doesn't have to write a battle scene.
Yeah, I mean, and this is, I mean, C.S. Lewis did the same thing too. I think when they had battle scenes, they were like, oh, here's two paragraphs on a battle, and then of course when they make like the film or TV version, it's, you know, 2 hours of a battle, right?
But that's just in The Hobbit, because in Lord of the Rings there are plenty of battles that are like, there's Helm's Deep, fields, so they're discussed. Yeah. So I guess it's just because it's a children's book, so he just sort of simplifies it a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like in a few of his descriptions, he really sounds like the Silmarillions, like when he's like the elves, like drew their blades and like they're like fire and he gives this descriptions of the dwarves' armor and like how like their leggings were like, you know, really tight with steel rings that nothing could penetrate, but like they're very mobile. It is
very good descriptions here, because mind if I read just like a small paragraph of it?
Do it.
The elves were the first to charge. Their hatred for the goblins is cold and bitter. Their spears and swords shone in the gloom with a gleam of chill flame. So deadly was the wrath of the hands that held them. As soon as the host of their enemies was dense in the valley, they sent against it a shower of arrows, and each flickered as it fled, as if with stinging fire. Behind the arrows, 1,000 of their spearmen leapt down and charged. The yells were deafening. The rocks were stained black with goblin blood. Just as the goblins were recovering from the onslaught and the elf charge was halted, there arose from the valley a deep-throated roar. With cries of Moria and Dane, Dane, the dwarves of the Iron Hills plunged in, wielding their mattocks upon the other side. And beside them came the men of the lake with long swords. And that's basically the really interesting part.
Oh, I mean, no, but I mean, you can even go further
Shall I?
You know, when Thorin comes out and he, like, when everyone's getting beaten back and shit is not looking good.
Okay,
do you want to read that part?
Yeah. Suddenly there was a great shout, and from the gate came a trumpet call. They had forgotten Thorin. Part of the wall, moved by levers, fell outward with a crash into the pool. Out leapt the king under the mountain, and his companions followed him. Hood and cloak were gone. They were in shining armor, and red light leapt from their eyes. In the gloom, the great dwarf gleamed like gold in a dying fire. Rocks were hurled down from on high by the goblins above, but they held on, leapt down to the fall's foot, and rushed forward to battle. Wolf and rider fell or fled before them. Thorin wielded his axe with mighty strokes, and nothing seemed to harm him. To me, elves and men, to me, O my kinsfolk, he cried, and his voice shook like a horn in the valley. Down, heedless of order, rushed all the dwarves of Dane to his help. Down, too, came many men of the lake, for Bard could not restrain them, and out upon the other side came many of the spearmen of the elves. Once again the goblins were stricken in the valley, and they were piled in heaps till Dale was dark and hideous with their corpses. The wargs were scattered, and Thorin drove right against the bodyguard of Bolg, but he could not pierce their ranks.
Dude, how good is that?
That is some good battle writing.
It's sufficiently epic, I think.
Right? I mean, it's just like, this guy that was just an asshole is like so commanding enough that he's like, I got these 13 guys behind me,
and everyone is down,
and just like men, elves, to me. Hey,
and the fact that Bard can't restrain his own men,
that's the best part.
Hopping along with him.
Yeah, they're just
Bart's like, no, this guy,
man. This charismatic bastard just got our allegiance. Like,
did he kill a dragon? I don't think so.
They're like, yeah, what have you done for me lately?
Anything else you want to say about this?
Should we just move on then?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all right. For the best.
Okay.
Chapter 18.
All right. The return journey. Bilbo finally comes to his senses after Tyrioning out of the battle, and realizes that no one has been able to find him because he was knocked unconscious with the ring on him. He takes it off just as the man who was sent to find him checks the Raven Hill for the last time, which is very lucky for him. And so he comes out and discovers that the side of good has won, but no one is celebrating because there are many dead. And he says, "Victory after all, I suppose." Well, it seems a very gloomy business. And suddenly, he is taken... Well, not suddenly. He is just taken to a tent where Gandalf actually has a broken arm, so someone was able to beat an Istari pretty badly. But Gandalf's like, "Well, let's go check on Thorin." And Thorin is in his tent, and he's dead. He is essentially dead. He has been wounded with many wounds. And his armor is rent, and his notched axe was cast upon the floor. And I'm just going to read the dialogue between those two, because this is basically the only time Thorin is basically a nice guy.
Oh, it's and, sweet. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very good.
He looked up as Bilbo came beside him. "Farewell, good thief," he said. "I go now to the halls of waiting to sit beside my father's, until the world is renewed. Since I leave now all gold and silver, and go where it is of little worth, I wish to part in friendship from you, and I would take back my words and deeds at the gate." Bilbo knelt on one knee, filled with sorrow. "Farewell, King Under the Mountain," he said. "This is a bitter adventure, if it must end so, and not a mountain of gold can amend it. Yet I am glad that I have shared in your perils. That has been more than any Baggins deserves." "No," said Thorin. "There is more in you of good than you know, child of the kindly West. Some courage and some wisdom blended in measure. If more of us valued food and cheer and song above hoarded gold, it would be a merrier world. But sad or merry, I must leave it now. Farewell." Then Bilbo turned away, and he went by himself and sat alone wrapped in a blanket. And whether you believe it or not, he wept until his eyes were red and his voice was hoarse. He was a kindly little soul. Indeed, it was long before he had the heart to make a joke again. "A mercy it is," he said at last to himself, "that I woke up when I did. I wish Thorin were living, but I am glad that we parted in kindness. You are a fool, Bilbo Baggins, and you made a great mess of that business with the stone, and there was a battle in spite of all your efforts to buy peace and quiet. But I suppose you can hardly be blamed for that." And then... Oh, yeah. You kind of feel sorry for Bilbo, because you do realize he is just a homebody who got thrown into this kind of battle.
Yeah.
But Thorin, even as he's dying, Thorin says, "You know, now that I'm dying and the gold doesn't really matter, so I might..."
True, it's only when he realizes he's not going to get the gold that he's like, "Okay, I guess we can be friends now."
"They always told me I couldn't take it with me, so I'm sorry."
So yeah, then we find out that what happened during the battle. Apparently the Eagle NSA was monitoring the goblins and decided they were up to no good, and so they came along. But apparently the goblins were so badass that even the eagles were outnumbered. So in the end, our friendly neighborhood furry, Bjorn, shows up, and he's a giant-sized bear at this point and just starts killing so many people. He kills Bolg and his bodyguards, who ended up killing Thorin, along with Feely and Keely, who were defending him, and bears away Thorin's body to safety. At that point, when Bolg is killed, the goblins basically wuss out and they run away, but many get thrown into the River Running, another present for the Easterlings. Now they get dead fucking goblins in their river. And so that's essentially what happened. It says songs have said that three parts of the goblin warriors of the north perished on that day, so peace is relatively guaranteed in the north for a time. Bilbo asks where the eagles are now, and Gandalf's like, oh, they're gone. And Bilbo's like, well, shit, I wanted to see some eagles. And then we skip to the burial of Thorin in the mountain. Bard lays the Arkhan stone upon his breast, and the King Thranduil lays Orcrist down on his tomb as well. Each kind of making their own peace with the old dwarf. The remaining dwarves don't get their 14th shares because Dane comes in and is like, this is a lot of fucking gold. We're going to use this a lot differently than just splitting it evenly. So he gives, but he does give a 14th share to Bard because, you know, he fucking deserves it. And then Bard gives it to the Elven King some emeralds because green stuff is the wood elves fetish, apparently. And then Dane, this is basically just me reading The Hobbit because these are such good, like, parts at the end. Dane comes up to Bilbo, and to Bilbo he said, this treasure is as much yours as it is mine, though old agreements cannot stand, since so many have a claim to in its winning and defense. Yet even though you are willing to lay aside all your claim, I would wish that the words of Thorin, of which he repented, should not prove true. That we should give you a little. I would reward you most richly of all. How very kind of you, said Bilbo, but really, it is a relief to me. How on earth should I have got all that treasure home without war and murder all along the way, I don't know. And I don't know what I should have done with it when I got home. I'm sure it is in your hands better. In the end, he only takes two small chests, one with silver and one with gold, and says, that will be quite as much as I can manage. And he then says, farewell, Balin, he said, and farewell, Dwalin, and farewell, Dori, Nori, Ori, Oin, Gloin, Biffer, Buffer, and Bomber. May your beards ever grow thin. And turning toward the mountain, he added, never grow thin, not ever grow thin. That's a dick move.
Yeah, I was going to say, what?
See ya, dicks.
Bald, you fuckers.
It took me away from my goddamn home. And then he turned toward the mountain, and he added, farewell, Thorin Oakenshield, and Feely, and Keely. May your memory never fade. Then the dwarves bowed low before their gate, but words stuck in their throats. Goodbye and good luck, wherever you fare, said Balin at last. If ever you visit us again when our halls are made fair once more, then the feast shall indeed be splendid. If you're ever passing my way, said Bilbo, don't wait to knock. Tea is at 4, but any of you are welcome at any time. Then he turned away.
Aww.
And that's always my favorite, because they're like, oh, come visit us, and our halls will have feasting, and roaring fires, and malt beer, and ripe meat off the bone. And, like, Bilbo's like...
And he's like, I just want to go home.
I want you to know that tea would be at 4. And wipe your shoes when you arrive.
But
you're always welcome for tea time, or, you know, whenever. Just don't be too much of a bother.
Yep. Well, he says, don't wait to knock. Just come on in.
Yeah.
Which is actually very sweet. Generous of a hobbit.
Admittance unless...
unless on party
business. Previously said dwarf business.
Well, the dwarves do stay with Bilbo when they bring shit for the party.
Oh, yeah, because they make toys.
No, the Dale men make toys.
I think it's the dwarves.
Oh, whatever. They outsource it. And so Gandalf and Bilbo join the elf host on their way back home. They enjoy hanging out with Thranduil and Beorn, who's joined them. And when they leave the Elven King, once more, I'm just going to read all these farewells, because these are such great farewells. Farewell, O Elven King, said Gandalf. Merry be the greenwood, while the world is yet young, and merry be all your folk. Farewell, O Gandalf, said the King. May you ever appear when you are most needed, and least expected. The oftener you appear in my halls, the better shall I be pleased. I beg of you, said Bilbo, stammering and standing on one foot, to accept this gift. And he brought out a necklace of silver and pearls that Dane had given him in at their parting. In what way have I earned such a gift, O Hobbit? Said the King. Well, I thought, don't you know, said Bilbo, rather confused. that some little return should be made for your hospitality. I mean, even a burglar has feelings. I have drunk much of your wine and eaten much of your food. I will take your gift, O Bilbo the Magnificent, said the king gravely, and I name you elf friend and blessed. May your shadow never grow less, or stealing would be too easy. Farewell. And, of course, the elves have to have their little quips at the end. And so then Bjorn and Gandalf and Bilbo make their way well through Mirkwood because spiders are just have fucked off somewhere. And there's no goblins or wargs around because they got their asses handed to them. And finally, they reach the Misty Mountains, and Bilbo says, so comes snow after fire, and even dragons have their ending, said Bilbo, and he turned his back on his treasure. The Tookish part was getting very tired, and the Baggins was daily growing stronger. I wish now only to be in my own armchair. And that's where the chapter ends, but we still have another chapter, but...
Classic false ending, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great ending, like all the goodbyes and stuff. But there's a lot in this chapter.
Yeah, because they're recapping.
Yeah, because we have the whole kind of the back end of the battle here. There's one part that I always especially love, and just why like Bjorn's such a badass. Because like when he shows up, they say like he showed up like by himself and was just a madman. But at one point in the battle, let me see if I can find him. Yeah,
and no says, one knows where he came from.
Yeah, no one knows what like no one knew called him. Where. He just was like, I knew this was going to happen. He shows up, and then kind of in the middle of the battle, like Thorin's, you know, in the middle of being, you know, a badass, but he's kind of done at this point. Says, then Bjorn stooped and lifted Thorin, who had fallen with pierced with spears, and bore him out of the fray. Swiftly he returned, and his wrath was redoubled, so that nothing could withstand him. No weapon seemed to bite him. He scattered the bodyguard and pulled down Bog himself and crushed him. Basically, it's just like end game. He just goes on, and then, you know, with the eagles and everything. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, so how do you bear mode? Like,
the original beast mode.
Yeah. Right?
But I think they said it, like, it seemed like he was, like, giant size when he showed up. Like, I don't know, like, with his shape changing, it seems to, his emotions seem to affect his ability there. But it also says, at the end of this chapter where it talks about how, like, he had kids and became kind of like a lord of the area or something, right? And, like, all of his kids could shape change to a certain degree.
Yeah, where were they during the War of the Ring? I feel like bear people could have been a little helpful.
Well, yeah. No, they're still attacked.
There's a battle up north.
Yeah, but I feel like Bjorn, like, especially in the movie, was like, oh, we'll drop this bear guy in for 2 seconds, but I feel like he was huge in the books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just and... because, yeah, he brought that Thorin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he brought him out of it, which, I mean, it was too late at that point, but...
But he was still alive at that point.
Yeah.
So...
And that allowed Bilbo to have that final conversation.
And just... This is more just like a Tolkienism, how Bilbo takes a chest of gold and a chest of silver, and I just randomly thought of the Trees of Valinor, the Golden Laurelin and the Silver Telperion, and I doubt he meant anything by this, but I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, but something to think on.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's so much treasure for a hobbit, but just the whole...
Yeah, two chests.
Isn't it great how Dane shows up? I mean, I love how they all agree to, like, we're just gonna bury the Arkenstone with Thorin, because this is his, and...
Yep.
You know, none of us want that evil on us. So,
okay, so you're thinking about Telperion and whatnot, and I'm thinking that gold is heavier than Silver, so the pony.
Oh my god! The pony keeps like flagging.
Lopsided.
He's like, you should have split it up evenly.
Okay, so I just googled it, and gold is like twice as heavy as silver. So
he could only take half as much gold as he could take silver.
No, but it says, like, the chest, the size of
he
the
just
chest
took two chests, equal. Yeah. I assume yeah. they're as, equal, yeah.
As much as a pony yeah. could carry, so...
Maybe he just... He I'm just went a few argue, hours on I'm one side and then he flipped them, you know, a few hours on the other side.
I'm not going to argue a weight of gold in a story where a person can turn into a bear.
Yeah. And also, the Arkenstone is kind of, you know, related to the Silmaril. Like, where the elves value the Silmaril above anything else and they'll, you know, give up a hoard of gold and silver for it.
Yep.
You know, this is what Thorin wants. It's part of his family or whatever. It's the heart of the mountain and it's his. So yeah. he's like, okay, I'll give a 14th of it for it. But like,
a 14th.
So one thing.
Bard gets his 14th share. But it's, I mean, which, yeah. you know, obviously whatever. And most of that probably goes to helping Lake Town. It says he's very generous with his friends. And I think he says he gives some to the master, which I don't know why the master seems so incompetent. Why didn't he doesn't just take over? But
because he's like, yeah. Stephen Fry, you're such a great actor. I really admire your work here.
Yeah, just, hey, I'm giving you this as long as you don't give any to Alfred, okay? He can't have a penny. Just send him down river.
Alfred can fuck off in that little dress of his.
But yeah, it is funny that Dane shows up and he's the new king under the mountain, and he's of course, you know, the guy who wasn't involved in this and wasn't really like he didn't have a claim to the treasure like the others do. And like, well, you know, the old portioning is not going to work anymore. That's right out. Like, well, of course you would say that, Dane. But it was ridiculous to begin with.
But. Yeah, but I mean. He was like an established ruler where Thorin apparently was, you know, digging coal mines, shit like that. I don't know. This whole
so
book
what,
is
so
very...
yeah, like what exactly was Thorin to his people at large? I mean, when he called, they came. He's clearly royalty, but it's been so long. Was he ever really leading anything?
He was leading his people in the Blue Mountains.
I thought he was like the regent for the king under the mountain of the Lonely Mountain. Like, and that's what gave him such like prestige.
I think it's mostly just bloodlines because
yeah,
the dwarves always are like, oh, Balin, son of Fundin, and they like trace their lineage really well. And, like, this is Thorin, son of Thrain, son of Thror, the king under the mountain. He is the rightful heir. The return of the king.
Crazy amount of, like, Thorins.
He is definitely more the rightful heir than Aragorn.
Yeah, Aragorn is, like, generations removed. And, first off, it isn't even his line that are the kings of Gondor. If anything, they're kings of Arnor.
After the, Aragorn's one of Aragorn, like, I think Aragorn was descended from Isildur's line, but through a woman. So obviously you can't count that.
It's so far back, too. Like...
Isildur, just not in the direct male line.
Yeah, and I mean, the dwarf lines do go back very far. They just also live. Like really long lifespans.
Yeah, they like live an average dwarf lifespan is like 500 years.
500.
But then you like compare that to elves and like Círdan's like, bitch, I've been here since the world was like first created.
Yeah. Now see, like the elves.
Yeah, they're like, wait a minute. I had a really bad case of diarrhea, and that was your lifespan.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my god.
But anyway, the elves being like
so you're so charming, Barley. You are just the cherry on top that makes me okay.
So
I mean, a dwarf's lifetime is like what 250 years, and Elrond's been alive for how many
thousands?
Centuries?
Like a good several thousand.
So this is what I was going to ask: is because the elves that
the Ladril was.
Galadriel's from Valinor.
Yeah. Well, not from Valinor, but she was born in...
No, she was born in Valinor.
She was born in Middle-earth, but went to Valinor, saw the trees, and came back.
She wasn't born in Valinor. Her father was Finarfin, Fëanor's half-brother.
Yeah. Judges, I'm going to need a ruling. Judges.
Yeah, I think she was born in Valinor, because Finarfin went to Valinor, right? And I'm assuming he had, like...
Yeah, because Gil-galad is her great-nephew.
Yeah, the Elven family trees get confusing. Yeah. But see, okay, so my point was going to be that... like the elves live for a very long time, and they seem to have they're a lot more like adjusted than other races, I guess, in most ways. So like a father never really passes on, you know, unless he dies, he doesn't really pass on rule of his kingdom or anything in that way. But like with the dwarves, it's kind of expected, but they also have really long lifespans, but they also seem to share a lot of kind of human traits. So like, how does a kid deal with, I'm like, hey, I'm 300 years old and I'm still, you know, I'm still the kid, I'm still the son of the rule. You know, like, how does that get handled by like, a dwarven heir? Because, like, humans don't handle that so well sometimes, right, in history. Like, I'm 25, why aren't I a king yet, you know?
Yeah, but
anyway,
I think that...
We still have just one more chapter, guys.
Yeah, all right, let's finish
this. All right.
So,
Chapter
19, the last stage, finally.
Chapter
19.
In the wind tunnel.
So anyway, so Gandalf and Bilbo finally come back to Rivendell, and the elves are singing because they got nothing better to do. And it is literally, that is all they're doing in Rivendell. Anyway.
Two pages of singing.
Yeah, there's literally, it takes up, it's not even that good of a song. I'm sorry. But, we finally learn about what the hell Gandalf was doing when he just kind of fucked off and left Bilbo and the dwarves to their own devices in a giant spider-infested forest. He was getting rid of the Necromancer, who probably won't come back into play ever again. But they drove him from Mirkwood, and Elrond says, yeah, but he's probably not going to be destroyed in this age, or probably for a while. Bilbo falls asleep and then wakes up because the elves are fucking singing again, and he's like, god damn it. Well, merry people, what time by the moon is this? Your lullaby would have wakened a drunken goblin, yet I thank you. And your snores would have woken a stone dragon, yet we thank you, they answered with laughter. Assholes. Then they set out again. It's May, so it's very nice weather, because they basically wintered in Rivendell for a time. Then they finally come across the troll treasure, and Bilbo insists that Gandalf take it, because he'll probably find a greater use than he will. Gandalf insists that they split that as well, though, and so adding to that poor pony who has lopsided shoulders because of the gold on one side and the silver on another, they get another heap of treasure on it. Gandalf says that Bilbo has changed, and Bilbo's right, you're goddamn right I've changed. But then they finally come back, and there is an auction by Messrs. Grub, and Burrows to auction off the effects of the late Bilbo Baggins Esquire of Bag End, Underhill, Hobbiton. And the sale has already been going on for 2 hours, and basically so much of his shit is just gone. The Sackville Bagginses are measuring the rooms, the greedy shits, and Bilbo's like, fuck off, I'm not dead. I got this lopsided pony to prove it. So now he has to go out and buy a bunch of his stuff back, but he still can't find his silver spoons, because Lobelia gotta have her spoons. But he also lost his reputation, because people are like, oh, look at him. He's one of those queer tooks. But he did not mind. He was quite content, and the sound of the kettle on the hearth was ever more musical than it had been, even in the quiet days before the unexpected party. His sword he hung over the mantelpiece. His coat of mail was arranged on a stand in the hall until he lent it to a Madam House. His gold and silver were largely spent in presents, oft both useful and extravagant, which to a certain extent accounts for the affection of his nephews and nieces. His magic ring he kept a great secret, for he chiefly used it when unpleasant callers came. He took to writing poetry. Yeah, it's like when the Jehovah's Witnesses knock on his door. He doesn't have to pull the curtains. He just turns invisible.
Great use for the One Ring.
Great use. I'm sure Sauron used it like that as well. I'm just going to read this last page because it's such a comforting ending, because it's Hobbits in the Shire, and I love that sort of thing. One autumn evening, some years afterwards, Bilbo was sitting in his study, writing his memoirs. He thought of calling them There and Back Again, A Hobbit's Holiday, when there was a ring at the door. It was Gandalf and a dwarf, and the dwarf was actually Balin. "Come in, come in," said Bilbo, and soon they were settled in chairs by the fire. If Balin noticed that Mr. Baggins' waistcoat was more extensive and had real gold buttons, Bilbo also noticed that Balin's beard was several inches longer, and his jeweled belt was of great magnificence. They fell to talking of their times together, of course, and Bilbo asked how things were going in the lands of the mountain. It seemed that they were going very well. Bard had rebuilt the town of Dale, and the men had gathered to him from the lake and from the south and from the west, and all the valley had become tilled again and rich, and the desolation was now filled with birds and blossoms and spring and fruit and feasting in autumn. And Lake Town was refounded, and was more prosperous than ever, and much wealth went up and down the river running. And there was friendship in those parts between the elves and dwarves and men. The old master had come to a bad end. Bard had given him much gold for the help of the lake people, but being of the kind that easily catches such disease, he fell under the dragon sickness, and took most of the gold and fled with it, and died of starvation in the waste, deserted by his
dragon sickness.
He's got the dragon sickness!
The new master is of a wiser kind, said Balin, and very popular, for, of course, he gets most of the credit for the present prosperity. They are making songs which say that in his day the rivers run with gold. Then the prophecies of the old songs have turned out to be true after a fashion, said Bilbo. Of course, said Gandalf, and why should they not prove true? Surely you don't disbelieve the prophecies because you had a hand in bringing them about yourself? Don't really suppose, do you, that all your adventures and escapes were managed by mere luck, just for your sole benefit? You are a very fine person, Mr. Baggins, and I'm very fond of you, but you are only quite a little fellow in a wide world, after all. Thank goodness, said Bilbo, laughing, and handed him the tobacco jar. The end.
Bravo.
Yeah, that is great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why were they auctioning off all of his stuff?
Because he's dead.
No, I understand that, but, like, shouldn't they just be like, it's all mine, and they just move in? Like, they seem like that kind of not, greedy people.
They're not that greedy. Come on, Adam.
Well, they're auctioning it off just to have money, which I would assume they'd just sell off their old shit because their stuff is terrible. Take his, it's better. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, they are taking over Bag End. They just don't want all his stuff.
They're like, we want it empty so we can move in on our terrible stuff. Like, okay.
They hated except for his those decor. Spoons.
Yeah.
You want them spoons.
It just, it feels like a hole, and I want it to feel more open. We've got to get rid of all this stuff.
Bilbo was actually a hoarder.
It was just piled high.
This newspaper is from 50 years ago.
Yeah, if I win the lottery, I'm totally like building myself a Bag End.
The Bag End in the movie is just like the coziest looking place. I would love to have a Bag End.
You got a few rooms with an outward view, but then you don't really have to worry about like heating and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I understand why they like it, but again, like the economy of the Shire is kind of.
Oh my god.
I don't really understand it, so I don't know if you did. You listen to the
it's
first
agrarian,
part?
Adam. They're not.
Yeah, but like, couldn't anyone just find a hill and build a Bag End? Like, I don't know.
I guess.
Well, yeah, but you can't get food all the time.
And it's location, 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 Adam. This is the hole
this
at the
true.
Top of the hill. You don't want to be one of those schmucks like the Gamgees living down on number 3 Bagshot, though.
he's sort of like the lord of the town, huh?
Like, the Baggins are like the noble family, basically, of the community
I
because
do
they're
love,
so boring.
I do love how, yeah, it's like after this for, you know, 60 years or whatever until he leaves, that I think it's longer than that, that no, he's just kind of no longer respectable in the community, no matter the fact that he stays there and just kind of hangs out. But, you know, he has odd visitors sometimes and spends that gold at parties. Oh, so
mean. He gives them to his nieces and nephews. I think we know the real reason why Frodo liked Bilbo. Because he knew he was getting rich off that old man.
Because he knew the inheritance.
You know what? I bet he killed his parents so Bilbo would adopt him.
Wow. Wow. All right. We've gone there. Okay.
The Easterlings did nothing wrong, and Frodo killed his parents. That's where we're at tonight.
Oh, my goodness. Well, the views of Paul do not necessarily set the views of the vassals.
And the dwarves were based on the Jews.
Paul, you gotta change your picture on Skype.
No. I love Falstaff. He's the bomb diggity. Look at how happy he is.
From your wind tunnel. So there you have it, The Hobbit, in probably, you know, three hours we managed to cover the book, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to split this into two parts.
I honestly don't think we need to do any after show stuff. I feel
no,
like
I'm,
we have enough.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think we're good. So we kind of weaved most of the stuff I wanted to talk about in through there, and then we have Tolkien trivia tomorrow night again. Yeah. So I think some more of this will come up.
Cool.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
The greatest adventure is what lies ahead. Today and tomorrow are yet to be said. The chances, the changes are all yours to make. The mold of your life is in your hands to break. The greatest adventure is there if you're bold. Let go of the mold that life makes you whole. The meaning can make you delay. It's time you stop thinking and wasting the day. A man who's a dreamer and never takes leave, who thinks of a world that is just make-believe, will never know passion, will never sits by the window, will one day see rain. The greatest adventure is what lies ahead. Today and tomorrow are yet to be said. The chances, the changes are all yours to make. The more your life is in your hands to break. The greatest adventure is what lies ahead.
Matt just couldn't handle that battle scene. He had to hang up for a little bit.
Oh, did he just
get... Yeah, he's disconnected.
it was so epic it shorted his call.
He needs a minute to just scream and celebrate how great J.R.R. Tolkien is.
George R.R. Tolkien.
George R.R. Tolkien.
As we know.
I killed them.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
What do we do?
Am I in charge?
Cut the bridges.
Ring the bell. Get the black arrow. Do it! Oh my god, my dog's freaking out!
My grandmother's on fire!
Put her out!
Pushes him like... Oh, he's back. Oh god. Ooh. Oh.
I yet live!
Oh no!
I fucking drowned him in Lake Town. Now I'm in charge.